Meanwhile, back in the States.
Everyone in the radios of Huntington tunes his radio exclusively. WKEE.
Meanwhile, back in the jungle.
A pterodactyl was a flying fool, just a breeze flapping daddy of the old school, but a mama dactyl could sure make him drool.
Meanwhile, back in the States.
Let me tell you something, Mr. Looks So Good. From now on, this house is where you used to live.
Hot dog, here's a dedication.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show, and we used to be the lunatic fringe, but that, of course, now more reserved for basically any branch of the government you decide to choose. You know, usually when we talk to somebody, I'm very focused on one specific area, the one in which they have the most experience. But you're about to meet Dr. Madeline Kosman, and the areas are numerous. What they all have in common, though, is the thread that we believe so strongly in, that the government is more than whittling away your rights, now taking them wholesale. And when I first heard about Dr. Kosman, it was through John Rook, world's greatest programmer, and he said, you gotta hear what she's saying about illegals and emerging diseases. So I thought, you know, that's a good a place to start as any. Dr. Kosman, welcome to the Raleigh James Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to work with you.
Yeah, I appreciate this. And as I say, I was, in fact, just before you were on the air, I was reading the work you did on TIPS, which back in 2002, which was one of the most egregious programs that clearly hasn't gone away, or looking back to 93, the ABCs of Hillary Care and things like this. So you've been involved in fighting for our rights for a long time. And what's fascinating about that is you don't really expect people from Barnard Hunter, Columbia University to, in fact, have that mindset. So what turned you on to liberty?
Well, as a matter of fact, I've been a patriot ever since I was a kid. And I've adored America. I've adored the concept that here we have independence. We could express our integrity, our individuality. So I've been an America lover from the beginning. In fact, literally since my childhood, I have carried the Constitution in my wallet.
Me too. I keep a pocket Constitution at all times on me.
Fantastic.
Excellent.
It's a bond between us.
There you go. Now, there are so many things over the years that you've worked on, and many of them have been, I won't say in theory, but not quite as imminent as what you've been working on recently. We're talking about the return of diseases we wiped out.
You're absolutely right. Actually, Raleigh, I had been an East Coaster. I had lived for the most part of my academic and my professional career in New York and in Washington, doing a great deal of work in both states. However, in the year 2000, I moved west to California, and then I suddenly discovered what I had known intellectually, but now I knew at the level of blood and sweat, namely that illegal aliens were, in the most dramatic way, transforming medicine in America. But in California, doing it in the most despicable and dreadful way, because, for one, the illegal aliens are welcomed in all of our emergency rooms and trauma centers, which have essentially degenerated into local medical offices, mm-hmm. and because of a particularly pernicious and vicious law called EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, the illegal aliens have been getting free care. Mm-hmm. Well, up to about 50% of all the care and services provided by these institutions. So in California alone, 84 hospitals have closed in the past 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the things that I discovered.
Right, yeah, economically, you're right. We have a situation where the price of staying in business for a hospital is treating these illegals, and that usually means just writing off the care.
That's correct. Not only are the emergency rooms and trauma centers and hospitals themselves being very altruistic and just welcoming all who come, but in fact, the law, mm-hmm. EMTALA, Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, makes it a crime for the hospitals to not treat. That is, they're fined mm-hmm. up to $50,000 per patient if they do not treat, but they're not paid if they do treat.
Right, exactly. It's not like it's a Medicaid reimbursement. These are illegals. And, you know, for the most part, while clearly there are some illegals here out to do us serious harm, most of these people, it's the law of unintended consequence. Half of them don't know what they're bringing, but that doesn't make it any less palatable to some American who suddenly has been diagnosed with leprosy.
That's correct. And when you contemplate that in the past 40 years, we had perhaps 900 cases of leprosy in the whole USA. In the past 3 years, we suddenly have 7,000 cases. Now, leprosy is this terrible, debilitating, destructive disease, which literally goes back to the biblical days.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the disease of the soul. It was construed as such an absolutely horrendous and despicable disease, because it would essentially destroy the face, the fingers, and the toes that it was said to represent in the body, the absolute corruption of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, it's a contagious disease, and it's so common now that in New York, actually on Staten Island, there is a separate leprosy clinic. There are leprosy clinics now emerging throughout the country.
We'll bring back colonies before this is over.
It could happen.
Yeah, now, you know, as far as that goes, I'm sure there are some people saying, oh my God, what are the symptoms? Because none of us have been taught what the leprosy symptoms are.
Sure. Well, leprosy is generally called Hansen's disease. And what generally happens is that it looks as though initially the patient has either a lack of sensitivity, sort of paresthesias, a lack of mm-hmm. Tingling and a lack of sensitivity in the fingers or the toes, but then the skin begins to break down. And ultimately, if leprosy is not treated, the fingers and the toes literally fall off. The nose, the ears, the appendages of the face fall off because they become necrotic. It's terrible. However, even though leprosy is a fierce and awful disease, it is by no means as dangerous to America as is, say, tuberculosis.
Right, right, exactly. Now, with leprosy, let's assume that somebody starts to have symptoms. This is, I'm guessing, with modern antibiotics, reasonably treatable.
Yes, it is. But okay. One of the problems is that most physicians aren't
trained
really
to see it. Well, yeah. That's why it's almost you know, it's almost a joke until you find out that we're up to 7,000 cases. And I would also assume that the treatment for this is somewhat long term. It's not 2 weeks of antibiotics and you're done.
You're right. You're absolutely correct.
So,
and it's also, however, contagious.
Right, and we probably don't even know at what stage the contagion stops. I mean, we know nothing about this.
Well, there are people who do, and it's fortunate that that they're going to be making more and more public the symptoms and mm-hmm. the ways of getting treatment.
Yeah.
But it's astonishing to realize that there are really two basic classes of diseases that the illegal aliens are bringing in. One is the type of disease that we've almost never seen here. Things that are only associated with third world poverty, or what I've been a medical school professor for about 30 years,
mm-hmm.
and we used to have courses in what was called tropical diseases,
right,
or foreign land diseases, things never expected here. So there are those diseases, such as Chagas disease and dengue fever. And then there are the other diseases, such as TB, that we had already vanquished. We had gotten rid of them. We had just had such sophisticated medicine and such excellent sanitation and such great hygiene that we eliminated them from our, well, we didn't eliminate every last case, but we virtually overcame those diseases. They were no longer endemic to the country.
Exactly. And then you read that suddenly at a chicken processing plant, there's a major outbreak of TB, and you say, how could this happen? And you go right back to illegals.
That's right. And it's not, Raleigh is not just in the border states. I think the chicken plant
was Oklahoma.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Broken Arrow, Oklahoma.
Right.
Can you imagine that?
Right, outside of Tulsa, sure. Well, it's going to be, because, you know, when you say, can you imagine that, we used to think of illegals, you know, maybe centering around Santa Ana. But today, you can be in any of the 50 states, and you will encounter, whether you realize it or not, illegal aliens.
Right. You're absolutely correct.
And that, you know, that's the most startling thing. And it's not just Hispanic by any means, although that's probably the largest group. But, you know, I had not realized how widespread it was until I started traveling again through areas that I had lived in 30, 40 years ago, like the Central South and things like this. And suddenly areas where you'd never hear a foreign accent, you were encountering four, five, six times a day people who didn't speak a word of English.
Right.
And that's the startling part when you say, you know, outside of Tulsa, yeah, that's right. Or it can be, you know, in northern Alabama. It can be anywhere.
Well, I was actually lecturing in Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And on the plane over, I noticed that there was a rather good-looking young man sitting next to me. And he, well, just by the way he conducted himself, his posture, I immediately thought, ha-ha. Law enforcement or military.
Okay.
So I asked him.
Right.
And he said that he is an agent for ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and he was on his way to Des Moines, Iowa, mm-hmm. to pick up a group of illegal aliens, all of whom were sexual predators.
Oh, my God.
And he is part of a group called Operation Predator. This is the first I had heard of it. And apparently, there are so many illegal aliens who are violent sexual predators that this gives our Immigration and Customs Enforcement the instant opportunity to deport them because they are viewed as criminals. And there's a special group, as I say, called Operation Predator, a group of agents that dedicate themselves entirely to picking up these horrendous bastards who prey upon children men and boys and girls.
What's shocking to me in what you just said wasn't that they were in Des Moines, or wasn't that you met this fellow, or even that there was an agency. The word I zeroed in on was group. This guy was picking up a group of sexual predators in Des Moines.
That is correct.
This means multiple sexual predators.
That is, what was amazing to me was that he said, and then I checked this actually on the website, and any of your listeners can do the same, there were, in the first year of this this particular group's operation, 2,600 sexually violent predators who were apprehended. That's the first year.
Mm-hmm.
And what was amazing to me was that there were specific groups in specific cities. So in Houston, Texas, 244 predators arrested. In New York City, dozens. They didn't give the exact number. In Baltimore, 24 child sex predators. In Austin, Minnesota, 92.
Yeah, but you see, as soon as you said Austin, Minnesota, it's the world headquarters for Hormel. One of the things you're discovering here.
I didn't realize that. You're right.
Yeah, of course. You know, that's where the Spam Museum is. So.
Thank you. You've taught me something important. Now I understand that.
Yeah, anytime you see a city where you're saying Decatur, Alabama, you know, or
you're
something
right.
like that, always look to see what's there that could be an employment magnet.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I had asked myself the question, but I didn't answer it. Thanks to you, I now have the answer.
Yeah, but, you know, of course, this now dovetails, because this, obviously, this whole problem is not just straightforward and simple. And what you're saying dovetails right into the fact that these illegals, including their diseases, are, you know, ignored so they can get in here because they form America's slave class. They're the folks who are under the radar that these companies don't have to pay minimum wage to or benefits or a number of other things. And so I've always believed on some level that people are looking the other way because there's an economic incentive.
Well, I agree that there's an economic incentive.
No, I don't think this is okay. I think this is terrible. But what I'm saying is...
I would not call it slave. Because these people are, for the most part, coming by their own volition.
Oh, of course.
And they are being paid.
Oh, no, no, of course. I don't mean it that way. I mean just in terms of the underclass, the class that would fall below what we'd consider to be the accepted economy. You know, it's like the myth of the free, of the minimum wage. We say that, you know, everybody's worth this, but what we forget to say is, well, people may be worth this, but some jobs are not.
Right.
And they'll find another group to come and take them. And in this case, it's, you know, it's the illegals. And, of course, the price of this is people are dying.
People are dying who are American.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Who don't even know the source of their anguish.
Right.
There are diseases, specifically pediatric diseases. Little children are suffering from diseases that many of the pediatricians don't instantly identify because, once again, they don't think that these diseases are as prevalent
right.
as they are. But, for example, there's a terrible cardiovascular disease called Kawasaki's disease.
Oh, yes.
And this is just horrible. The little children who are almost always under age 5. And about 4,000 every year get Kawasaki's disease, and they get what is called strawberry tongue, and their eyes have red rings around them. But the worst part is that it attacks the coronary arteries, and these little kids develop heart attacks, and they die. A great percentage of them literally drop dead.
And this is contagious.
It's contagious, and it's called Kawasaki disease, and it was named by a Japanese physician, and initially it attacked only the children of Asian birth or illegal aliens who were Asian, but that is not so. Because it's contagious, of course, it spreads to whoever is nearby. Many, many people who actually hire illegal aliens, particularly to cut their grass
right.
or to clean their houses,
mm-hmm.
are simply not fully alert to the dangers of illegal aliens bringing in things to hurt their kids.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, even the people who are coming in contact at the car wash and the dry cleaners and everywhere else, it is something that has not yet hit the American psyche to realize that the downside might be they're going to die.
Exactly.
Yeah, just beyond scary. Dr. Madeline Kosman is with us, and as I say, her resume and her background is just voluminous when it comes to issues regarding our liberty, and of course, nothing as vexing as the problem with illegals, and we're talking about the emerging diseases initially, but that's only a part of it, obviously. You know, one of the things we think of so often is, well, maybe they're coming for the right to work, but how about the terrorists who come with them? Oh, you betcha. You betcha. We don't know who's coming into this country. And until the public awakens and demands wholesale change, we're in trouble. And you haven't heard the half of it yet.
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
And I want to mention Discount Gold and Silver Trading. They are a terrific company. You know, if you've ever dealt in buying gold, I'll tell you what, Discount Gold and Silver Trading will amaze you. they will have customer service like you have never witnessed before and a commission rate that's almost unbelievable. You will get more gold for your money and the kind of service that you deserve. But if you've never traded in gold and you're now looking for something that might preserve and or accumulate wealth, it might be something where you're saying, hey, I don't have a lot of money, but with a fiat currency, I really would like to take a look at something that will always have intrinsic value no matter what happens to the government. Well, gold will do that, and of course, we're not talking about stocks or options or anything risky like that. We're talking about the metal itself. But I was stunned to find out that when it comes to gold as a metal, as a substance, it comes in a variety of forms, and they don't all perform in the same way. Depending on what you're trying to do, one might definitely be better than another. Some of the major people you'll hear on radio or TV will give you slick brochures and fast-talking sales deals, but the bottom line is it's the big commission for them rather than the product that's right for you. Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company will take the time to get to know you. They will inform you as to what is available, and they trade in everything, so it's not that they're going to steer you into any one thing. They're not going to steer you at all. They'll give you the information. Then you can decide, no high pressure, no sales, what, if anything, is right for you. No minimum orders. It's just a great education and a wonderful way to buy gold, and a great way, if you're saying you're not comfortable with the stock market and things like that, to diversify. Melody and her staff have been doing it for over 11 years. Every one of them are professionals at this. Whoever you talk to will take the time, as I say, to get to know you and to give you all the information. Numismatics or bullions or liberties or eagles, they've got them all. And as I say, they were just words to me. I had no idea that how you bought it might dramatically change how much money you'd get when you went to sell it or your ability to use it as a currency if that were ever the case. So they're truly terrific. You will learn a lot, and they're good people. Discount Gold and Silver Trading.net. That's Discount Gold and Silver Trading.net. Or give them a call. They'd love to talk to you. 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. And tell them that Raleigh sent you. We'll get back to Dr. Madeline Cosman, who is just a font of information about things that absolutely affect your liberty. You know, we started out by talking about how emergency rooms are literally closing hospitals, 84 of them in California alone, just shuttering their doors due to our policy with illegals. So the idea that it's benign, economically it's a disaster. Now we talk about the diseases that are coming in. Whoever thought I'd ask for the warning signs for leprosy? All right, well, as I say, that's just the start of it, and we'll get into the rest of it, as well as why is this happening and what can you do about it, coming up on the Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show.
Why do fools fall in love?
If you're starting to think there's more behind our government than what you're being told, you're in the right place. The Raleigh James Show.
Speaking of fools, yeah, our entire philosophy with regard to illegal immigration is more than foolish. Dr. Madeline Cosman joins me, and this is just one of her areas of expertise. So, doctor, here we have the emerging diseases, as I was saying. Here we have, and when we say emerging, we should say re-emerging, the things we got rid of. Here we have hospitals that are closing their doors, and here we have a border that is leaking like a sieve. We haven't even gotten to, you know, the other implications of that. But on this alone, why is the government doing nothing?
Well, that actually was something that perplexed and mystified me, but I think I'm now beginning to understand it, and I'm horrified by what I'm seeing and understanding. I must tell you, I do a great deal of work in Washington and on health policy, mm-hmm. and it's wonderful work, and I'm deeply respected in Washington. The minute I open my mouth about the perils of illegal aliens, I suddenly disappear as if I were invisible. People who had been listening to me before and say, thank you, Dr. Cosman, essentially bowing to me, mm-hmm. suddenly stopped listening. And I see that our president, for whom I had voted and for whom I have enormous respect in things medico-legal, is in fact an internationalist. He's a globalist.
Yes.
And when he met with Vincente Fox and with the Prime Minister of Canada, what were they doing on his ranch? They were, in essence, creating new borders that were perimeters, as they called it, ranging from the tippy top of Canada to the bottom of Mexico, essentially obliterating our American borders with both of those countries.
Right.
They want not only porous open borders, they want disintegration and destruction of borders. Raleigh, this is complete madness, and it completely destroys our sovereignty. But I believe that that is the reason that the President, the Congress, our state legislators are essentially ignoring the problems and the specifically the medical threats, because I could argue that rather than simply worry about an object of mass destruction, we have got perilous engines of health destruction coming into our cities right this minute.
Well, you know, what you're saying, suddenly something clicked with me, because, of course, the general populace would never vote for eliminating the borders in our country. However, and of course we've all read the CFR reports, I hope so, that sets right. 2010 as the date for a fait accompli. And yes, that's exactly what Bush and Fox and Canada were talking about. But you think about it this way. Traditionally with immigrants, you've got to be health tested, or at least now health certified. With illegals, you got to be nothing. So I can just see some major problem and us saying, well, clearly we can't control what's coming across the border. So rather than worry about that, we need to find a quote-unquote orderly, and Bush has already used this word, orderly way to process these people so that they can come here without infecting us.
Well, there, of course, is no way to
do that. I agree.
But there's yet something else that's going on in Washington and elsewhere. In addition to the universalists and globalists, there are those who are, in essence, the proud scientists. And as a general rule, I had associated myself with such people, but now I'm beginning to want to dissociate myself, because, for the most part, they're arrogant and careless.
Mm-hmm.
They state such things as, we have the best, most sophisticated scientific medicine in the world. It's our duty to help those who have less. It is our duty to provide those who cannot otherwise provide for themselves. Well, this is just arrant craziness. It's a type of misplaced altruism. But it actually comes from some of our most prestigious organizations, such
as
the Centers of Disease Control.
Right, and universities, too. I mean, there's so many things indoctrinating kids. But, you know, as you say, here again, I always wonder what half of the equation people are looking at. Because if it's our duty to, healthcare, treat people in third worlds, well, that comes at a great expense. So is it at the point of a gun that the money and everything else comes from us to do it?
That is precisely the way it will come.
Yeah.
Because there's no way that we're going to voluntarily give the necessary percentages of our incomes to taxes, which will then go for treating everyone who is in the Western Hemisphere, at least, who needs our sophisticated medicine and surgery.
Well, and not only the dollars, which are bad enough, but as you've seen, and you've done wonderful work on sustainable development, and we'll get to some of that too, but CAFTA and Codex Alimentarius, we're not only talking about money, but we're talking about treatment that is in lockstep with whatever the prevailing plan is.
Yes, you're correct. And one of the things that is absolutely horrifying me is the recognition that when we attempt to be hospital to the world and open our golden doors to anyone who cares to come through, we ourselves have less and less of the very freedoms and the scientific excellences that everyone else wants. because there is, in essence, a socialist concept that the best in the high-tech equipment, the best in the high-tech medication, the best in the high-tech medical ideas, all of this best is too costly. So whatever everyone cannot have, no one shall have.
Right. Right, which is frightening on the face of it. Or, you know, even beyond that, you watch, I know very closely what's going on with AIDS research, and look what's happening to the guy who's in charge of South Africa, who's saying, wait, I don't want to just do these retro drugs. Maybe HIV is not the causative agent, and this guy will be out of office soon.
That's very true. On the other hand, there are numerous people who are actually very glad to find that there's some mystical justification for terrible diseases so that they can then go on rampages and
right.
and insist upon reparations and other such things.
Yeah, it's the whole thing comes down to, for the average American who's saying, well, I'm not worried about third world countries and all that, but back in the early 90s, we had the FDA trying to grab our supplements, and we all went nuts, and rightfully so, and we thought we stopped that. But what we've got right now is we've got our health choices being limited through so many different ways that really haven't come to roost yet that you don't even know who to attack first or how to attack them.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. But if one starts to look at the patterns, and that's one of the things that I've been trained to do in my work, that is, when it appears that everything is chaotic and confusing and impossible to decipher, look for the patterns. And then when you teach your mind to look for the patterns, then suddenly they begin to appear. And one of the things that becomes evident in, say, sustainable medicine, in open borders for illegal aliens, in the attacks against our supplements and the codex, all of these are in essence socialist mm-hmm. ideas. And the pattern is always, let us take from the most productive to give to those who are most needy, and let us find the lowest, the cheapest, most accessible to all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this in almost every way is detrimental to things American, and it's certainly detrimental to the Bill of Rights, to the Constitution, to the Declaration of Independence, and to all those things that have made America great.
Oh, right. But not only that, but in every country where the crazy communist scheme's ever been tried to foster equality, while it's not the almighty dollar that separates one from another, there is more of a class distinction among socialism and communism than anywhere else, because the guy who's well-connected or well-placed, he gets everything.
Of course, you're correct.
So it's even more of a division than what we consider the free market economic division. But what we're talking about here is not only, Hillary Care, and I read where you had done a lot of work on that, and I kind of chuckled because when I was in San Diego years ago at KFMB, when that health care plan first came out, I ordered it. And they said, well, you want the synopsis, don't you? I said, no, I want the whole thing. And I had no idea, Madeline, that was going to be $1,000 in copying.
Right.
You know, the whole thing was like 6 feet tall.
You're right. It was 1,634 pages.
Yeah, it was insanity. So, with that in mind, if you read the whole thing, well, you did something that no one else in Congress ever did. The only thing I noticed was the, word criminal was in there more than the word medical.
Exactly.
And
well, you were the courageous creature who did it and read it as I did.
Yeah, it was insane. And, you know, after a while you looked at this and you thought, the only way this can pass is if nobody reads it. And, you know, fortunately it didn't. But what Hillary had said afterwards, and I'm sure you caught this, was she went back to the good old Fabians when she said, my mistake was to try to do it all at once. You know, suddenly
exactly.
Here's incrementalism. Now, between that time in 93 and now, how much of Hillary Care do we now have codified, do you think?
We have a huge amount. In fact, I've written pretty extensively on the subject. Actually, just so the listeners can know, in 1993, I had actually testified in Washington on the health plan, and I had said such things as, well, I, as a medical school professor, find it offensive that government shall choose who shall be our medical students, our interns, and our fellows. And one of the senators said, "Dr. Cosman, what do you mean?" And he became very, very red in the face. And I said, "Sir, it's in section 543, small letter B." And he said, "It is not." And it became very acrimonious, and he became more and more excited. So I simply read it, and then dead silence. Then I made another point, complete lack of response, because no one in the Congress had read the whole thing.
Right.
They were all intimidated by the sheer bulk of it. So on the, I was working in New York at the time on the shuttle back from Washington, I realized what this group needs is a primer, a basic ABCs, and I wrote the ABCs of the Clinton medical world for Congress, and I had it very whimsically, charmingly illustrated so that people who would otherwise reject it brought it into their homes thinking it was something charming for their kids, and lo and behold, all the seditious information was actually in their hands. And a whole group of us fought it vigorously, and I'm pleased to say we won. But...
yeah, did we, in the long run?
That's the question. In the law called HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, there's a huge amount of the despicable criminalization of physicians, the making of the simplest form of really secretarial error, you know, a billing code
right.
error, is made into a felony. It's a crime.
Well, and you've in some of your other work pointed out doctors who've gone to jail for years over billing code errors.
You're exactly correct. I must tell you, I've defended several of these people who have been among the most ethical, most efficient, excellent, scientifically trained practitioners. They were essentially made targets because they were so good, so excellent, and they therefore had such large practices. And people, there was an ophthalmologist in California who was accused, completely falsely, of having cheated the government out of $65,000.
Yeah, Dr. Ruttgard, I remember
exactly.
this.
You know that case.
Oh yeah. I mean, here he'd done, I don't know, thousands and thousands. There were 15 patients, and what they were claiming, as I recall, was that, well, the cataracts weren't ripe enough. They weren't
exactly.
absolutely medically necessary yet. And
fantastic.
So,
you're right.
Right. So 20,000 patients, here's 15 that they're deciding the cataracts aren't ripe enough, and this guy is pretty much under the jail. I think he got a $16.2 million fine.
That's exactly right. You're precisely on the mark.
Yeah, I remember that. This. And here's the part, and see, this comes up, what I want to talk about later is tips, is that what this does is anybody who's a former employee or who's out to get you or your ex-spouse, they turn you in and they get a cut of this.
And it is an absolutely pernicious system. It's called the qui tam action. And if the person turns the physician in, they indeed get up to 33 1/3%. And for someone who was accused of a $16.2 million perfidy, the income is fantastic. And one doesn't have to prove with the same burden of proof that one would have to in, say, a malpractice case. One just simply rats out a perfectly innocent person. And the problem is that it's almost impossible to defend. Because if the government has said, hypothetically, 54 over 6, whatever happens to be the number, is what is correct, and the physician puts in the wrong code, and it comes out to be 54 over 7, by the very nature of making that numerical error, the physician is guilty of a crime, and
right.
the crime is a felony, and the felony has the potential of prison. It's called a health care error and a health care crime. This is outlandish. So I just wrote a book, which will be out this year, called Who Owns Your Body?
Well, that'll be terrific.
And Doctors and Physicians Behind, Doctors and Patients Behind Bars.
Yeah, it's. I can't wait to read that. I think that'll be terrific. You know, the other thing, and I know you know this well, things like HIPAA have such a wonderful title. You know, you think that this is your own privacy and your portability, and this is going to be just marvelous. And so everybody who's been to a doctor in the last 5 years has thrust this thing to sign. Now, of course, little do they know that if they don't sign it, and I don't, it doesn't mean anything. The only thing you're signing is you got a copy. You're in this whether you want to be or not.
Well, the real deception is that the regulations are called privacy and confidentiality.
And it's neither.
And they are not only neither, but they destroy privacy and confidentiality.
Oh, right. You know, they can turn it over to whomever they want, from investigative research studies to the FBI, without your knowledge or permission.
What most people don't recognize is that in this Health Insurance Portability Act, the requirement is for what they call EDI, electronic data interchange.
Right.
And who wants to interchange my medical records? Well, that's the question. And it turns out now that anyone who accepts any form of government reimbursement, so that means Medicare, Medicaid, even if it's only for a few patients in the practice, must make all medical records, EDI, electronic data interchange, possible. So everything has got to be done on the computer for someone to ask for.
Right, and that went through. I mean, Bush pushed that through, and that was signed.
Exactly.
And what's the drop-dead date on when they've got to be doing it?
Well, apparently it's already passed, but there have been various extensions so that numerous hospitals and numerous physicians' offices still are not in compliance, and they're not yet being prosecuted. But they will.
Oh, sure, they will.
If they don't get online quickly.
Now, what is this as far as? Because you know, you look at this, millions of offices, literally, and billions of bits of data. Is there any requirement that they include all the past chart information, or is it from this point forward?
No, that's what is just so completely horrendous. It requires the past record plus the current, and if one reads the law, that it reads the regulations with care, one suddenly sees that there are penalties if the records are not absolutely current and complete. So various physicians are recognizing that they can go to jail if they write too much or they write too little. But what most people don't understand is that even the patients could go to jail. That is, I have helped defend the falsely accused physicians who've been accused of, say, providing medically unnecessary care or using the wrong reimbursement codes mm-hmm. in their offices. But the patient who has been treated by such a physician is said to be receiving ill-gotten gains.
Yeah, like stolen goods, yeah.
Stolen goods, exactly. Yeah. You know, the fencing of,
yeah. Yeah,
of
right.
the stolen stuff.
Right.
Well, it in the actual law, Raleigh, it says that the patient could go to jail as well.
Yeah, and like the patient would know, which makes it even more frightening. You know, oh, my God, he gave me a CT scan, and he wasn't supposed
right.
to do that because my blood levels were only this.
Exactly.
Now, you know,
and it's just that sort of idiotic circumstance that actually leads to some of the most horrendous cases.
Well, sure. And one of the things, of course, that's gone on, and as you well know in the lawyer profession, is doctors are being forced to almost do practices so that they're medical malproof, if you will. They're doing defensive medicine. So they're ordering up 37 tests when in their gut probably only needs one. So now you've got both ends against the middle.
That's absolutely correct.
You know, if they do, they're damned. If they don't, they're damned. And it really makes you wonder who wants to be a doctor. So we'll look at that. Dr. Madeline Cosman is with us, and she is truly a font of information. And as you're starting to see, it's like an onion. It's layers and layers. And the problem is that it affects you directly at your most vulnerable moment. The time when you're sick is usually the time when you find out what's going on. And it's not okay, and you need to know. So we will continue. Dr. Madeline Cosman is with us.
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
Let's talk spotters, the world's best sunglasses. They truly are. And I'm pleased to say more and more dealers all the time, so you can check it out for yourself. But the reality is that until spotters, I thought that sunglasses made it dark and therefore you could see better when the sun was bright. And that's not it at all. The perfect pair of sunglasses eliminates the glare. It doesn't have to change the light condition at all. It just eliminates the glare. And when there's no glare, you can see without squinting or without being in pain, and it doesn't matter if it's bright sunlight or if it's daytime rain or fog or snow. And when you don't see through the rain in the day, when you're looking for the line markers and on the interstates and they're not there, it's the glare. If you eliminate the glare, everything pops back into focus, and that's what spotters do. There's 10 lens styles. They're 30-frame styles. They were developed in Australia for anglers to see through the water, and then truck drivers discovered them, and there's literally been no turning back, no pun intended. Now they're here. I highly recommend the Penetrator lens. It's just terrific. It's photochromatic. It's a pleasing, relaxing tint, yet at the same time, everything is in more accurate focus. As one of our listeners, Sharon, had said, now I know why I call them, though why you call them spotters. Within the first 50 miles of wearing them on the road, I spotted three deers under the tree. Well, indeed, it's like that. Now, seeing is believing. Of course, you can go online, and I'll tell you where, but if you can see them for yourself, even better. So, spotters of Kenworth. Kenworth, three locations in Wichita, I-135 North at exit 13. Yes, yeah, somewhere near the biggest ball of twine. I-135 North at exit 13. Kenworth of Dodge City. It's on U.S. 56 South, north on Mineola Road, and Kenworth of Liberal, U.S. 54 to South Country Estates Road. Or, of course, a couple 24-hour-a-day dealers that are just terrific. Peterbilt of Wisconsin at Madison, it's exit 132 off of 9094, and Peterbilt of Illinois at Wadsworth, that's exit Russell Road off of I-94. And finally, Kenny Jones Positive Performance, I-44 in Stratford, that's exit 88. It's the Starport building, easy to find. All of them will have a full supply of spotters. You need to see them for yourself. But if you can't, you know, you can order online, and of course you can read about them online, and I hope you will. spotters-shades.com. That's spotters-shades.com. spotters-shades.com. You'll read all about them, and if you want to order online, they'll have links to dealers who can do that. But better yet, check them out for yourself. Either way, wherever you go, make sure you tell them that Raleigh sent you. Now, we will get back to Dr. Cosman next hour. I'm thrilled that she's taking the time to talk with us because it is like an onion. And what's really frightening, as Dr. Cosman was saying earlier, is that everything comes back to, it sounds like the Red Scare, but it's the truth, the socialist agenda. We'll get into the TIPS program, which, of course, yeah, rat your neighbor out, is a lot of the reason a lot of these doctors have been in trouble under the more onerous HIPAA regulations. We'll talk about the UN agenda, and of course, with CAFTA vote coming up, that is just more dangerous than you would believe, because of course the word in that is really frightening is harmonize. We'll also talk about what the heck happened to alternative health care, really, because ain't it gone.
The Raleigh James Show.
Science Report presents Ice Volcanoes and Termites.
How would you like to have fried chicken on your table just about any time you wanted it, huh? Well, now, look here, baby, you can.
Treat him gently and to him be true.
Send you 110 of the finest baby chicks you ever saw for the low, low price of just $2.95 plus 50 cents handling charge.
Dedication.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
Hey,
It is the Raleigh James Show in progress. And we are talking with Dr. Madeline Cosman. Hello, Philadelphia, on the Big Talker 1210 that gets in this hour, as well as News Talk 640 WHLO in Akron. You'll catch up. There are so many facets to Dr. Cosman's career, but when it all comes down to it, whether we're talking about sustainable development and those agendas, whether we're talking about Hillary Care or HIPAA and how much of that we've got, whether we're talking about what's wrong at the borders and what we're seeing with our illegals in terms of diseases we thought we eradicated, it all comes back to the globalist agenda and socialism, which, regardless how you feel about that in the abstract, in the absolute reality of it, it clearly limits your choices. This is not about money, although that's a facet of it too, but your choices with regard to your most personal rights, such as your health care. And Dr. Cosman, I got an email from a fella in Texas, Mitch, who listens regularly, and I know you were talking in some of your articles about everything like malaria that has reemerged. Yes. But we're hearing now on college campuses more and more about meningitis outbreaks. Any connection?
I don't know. I've heard that, but I haven't actually had a chance to explore it. It's conceivable, but I don't know.
Yeah, but the TB we do know, and the leprosy we do know.
There is absolutely no question that there are certain diseases such as TB, but let's take a look at what TB means now. It's not the old-fashioned TB. It's a new tuberculosis called MDR-TB. It's multiple drug-resistant tuberculosis.
Sure.
This is not the same relatively gentle TB that we had virtually eradicated. It was possible with the old-fashioned tuberculosis to cure in, say, 6 months, use 4 drugs, and perhaps at the cost of $2,000 per patient. This new multiple drug-resistant tuberculosis is called by many people who deal with it a time bomb, because it's stunningly difficult to treat. It's 60% fatal, and it costs per patient, and this is right from the Centers for Disease Control, anyone, any place near $250,000 to $1.2 million per patient.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, if there's a major outbreak in California, and there have been, this is a stunning burden upon an already burdened and broken medical system.
Oh, sure. And I think that much like today when we talk about childhood diseases like measles that have been theoretically eradicated, with all the drugs that have been around, you know, you've been fighting TB with antibiotics for years, so the TB organisms aren't, you know, without their own survival mechanism. They're fully resistant to what we're used to using. So, of course, they become very virulent, and not only in terms of money, but what that does to the human body for the kind of drugs they have to use now to try and eradicate it has far-reaching side effects if you do make it.
You're absolutely correct, because the drugs that are used are very toxic and have numerous side effects. You're absolutely right. In fact, on the same subject of the mutation of the actual organisms themselves for their own survival, there was an outbreak recently of dengue fever. Who would ever think of dengue fever here in the United States?
No one's heard of it.
Well, it's a nasty infectious disease that, however, has been having various outbreaks, generally on, say, the Mexican border with Texas. Webb County,
yeah.
Texas, had a big dengue fever explosion, but this was not ordinary dengue, which is nasty, but it's not fatal. This was dengue hemorrhagic fever. And
yeah.
As the name implies, it causes the individual to bleed to death.
Yeah, like Ebola or Marburg.
Exactly. So this type of disease that is being brought into the country is clearly it is actually the potential lethal, bomb-like weapon of health destruction. And we've got to understand that that's what these things are. They're
oh, yeah.
not innocent.
No, not on any level. And again, the fact that we've quote-unquote eradicated them, the very things we've eradicated them with are the things that when they come back, they're completely resistant to, and we're completely without ability to treat them, because in the third world country, the people just die.
That's exactly correct. And there are numerous, there are things such as Chagas disease.
Oh, yeah, the kissing disease.
Chagas is horrible.
Yeah.
And in Latin America, about 18 million people contract it every year, and 50,000 of those die. Well, we now have Chagas disease here. It's a terrible, I think the nickname for it is kissing.
Right, but it's not good, yeah, because of the lips and the face.
Right,
but
exactly. But once the bug, that despicable trypanosome bites the lips and the face, then Chagas actually infiltrates some major organs, such as the heart or the intestines, and then after a number of years, the organ is so weakened that it explodes.
Right.
Well, that's a fairly disgusting and horrible death.
Well, not only that, even if it is, say, let's say you got to the outside and you're making it 20 years before intestine explosion, these are 20 years where you're largely debilitated.
Exactly.
It's not the kind of thing where you've been perfectly healthy and you wake up one minute and your heart explodes. So, and of course, these are, you know, what are these, protozoa or something. They're not the kind of thing we're normally thinking we're going to treat here. And, you know, I also thought it was interesting because when you look at all the drugs you take for any of this, of course, the poor liver is going to be really, you know, taxed in this. And then you read that, gee, all forms of HEP are back.
That's correct. Now, and what people have got to understand is that hepatitis is sometimes transmitted, say hepatitis A, by feces.
Yes.
It really, what we've got to perceive is that if we are inviting people into our restaurants, and a huge number of illegal aliens are in fact in the restaurant business, they're in the food preparation business or the food cleaning business or the food transport business or the dishwashing. Well, in various restaurants, there was one not long ago, I think it was 2002.
Oh, we know.
Restaurant.
Yeah, it's in Pittsburgh. And,
exactly.
And what's really sad is, and I had no idea there were illegals in there, and your article pointed that out, and it was 2003, This bankrupted the chain. They're gone.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that's a real shame because, yeah, it was the green onions, and when I read that they had fecal contamination, I had not known that they also had illegals in their kitchen.
Right. Well, actually, it turned out that the scallions used in the salsa, I think it was, that were contaminated with feces that had been used as fertilizer. They also had, that is, they had illegal scallions as well as illegal aliens.
Right, because we're talking human feces that was used as fertilizer.
Precisely. And what many must perceive is that if there are people working in the kitchens who are illegal aliens who come from cultures in which it's customary to not have good bathroom hygiene, and literally to use their hands for wiping their bottoms.
Oh, my gosh.
It's disgusting, but it's true.
Well,
and we've got to appreciate that disease is transmitted literally person to person, bodily fluid or bodily solid to person. And what Americans must wake up to is that what appears to be a cheap source of labor is a very expensive form of infection.
Yes, yeah, and well put, that's absolutely true. And expensive both in the closing of our hospitals and the money you spent, but really expensive when it's you or your loved one who's hit with something that may be fatal.
Exactly.
And just by the nature of them being illegal, you know, we have no idea what they bring with them. And again, for many of them, it's certainly not with malice, but it doesn't much matter when you're facing a medical report with this stuff. Now, one of the other things that's alarming is, as bad as our border is at catching anybody, when they do catch folks, if they catch people who are Odoms other than Mexicans, we have this insanity policy where we give them what I like to call the notice to disappear. It's a notice to appear. 90% of them never show up, and they're in. They can be anywhere in America after that.
I've been speaking with people who are professionally in border patrol, and they are so frustrated and so angry, they indeed call it the notice to disappear, and we are essentially creating a world upside down. The other than Mexicans who come in, we allow to disappear into our culture, and that means people coming from those countries that sponsor or harbor, or for that matter, generate terrorists. This is absolutely nutty. What do we do when we find the illegal alien who must be examined for a general disease or a specific contagious disease? Well, if he's got something minor, we let him go and we may deport him. But if he's got something major, contagious and terrible, we keep him. And why do we keep him? The misplaced altruism in our medical system creates a type of ludicrous pride. Once again, we say we have the proper medication, we can treat him. In his own country, he'd have only primitive medical services. So we keep at our expense, at our Medicaid.
Yeah, our tax dollars, at your and my expense, yes.
But we keep the person here and attempt to treat, and then if we can't, we simply let him out into the city to infect our own citizens.
Right, into the general populace, and by the way, you know, it's okay that he's brought his family with him while he's here for treatment.
Correct.
So it becomes absolute and utter insanity. And again, you know, as you were saying, when you go back to it, the only thing that makes sense, we get right into the conspiracies, is in fact the concept of globalism and the concept of socialism. And then, of course, we get to the dreaded UN and that wonderful concept of sustainable development, which is not just for land anymore.
Well, when it first came out in 1992, and the Biodiversity Treaty and the Rio Treaty mm-hmm. were promoted, it sounded so benign and so delightful
yeah.
that we were going to protect the environment against pollution and nasty things of that sort. But you're absolutely correct. What it is, in essence, is a land grab. It's an attempt to eliminate private property. I had the chance to recently read and study and analyze the sustainable medicine documents that come out of that same tradition, Agenda 21.
Mm-hmm.
And I got them directly from Geneva, from the World Health Organization. And the intentions of sustainable medicine are absolutely pernicious. People will be shocked to realize that various high-tech medical products that we take totally for granted are being attacked by those who promote sustainable medicine because they're so good that they are not accessible to all people, therefore Americans should not have access to them.
Right.
The old business of if it's not for all, it shall be for none. And I was shocked to recognize that one of the things that the sustainable medicine people are attacking is flexible medical plastics. That is, if you think about cardiac catheterization, kidney dialysis, breathing tubes, feeding tubes, blood transfusion tubes, they're all with these beautiful, elegant, flexible plastic tubing.
Mm-hmm.
Or the bags for medicine and medication are, again, flexible plastic bags. Well, mm-hmm. before 50 years ago, the same types of treatments and therapies had to be given with metal tubing or ceramic or glass tubing, which, of course, was clearly painful and colossally clumsy. And therefore, with the flexible plastic, people can have normal ambulatory life and things go beautifully. In any event, Greenpeace, Healthcare Without Harm, a group of environmental groups, all associated with sustainable medicine, mm-hmm. want to eliminate flexible plastics. There's a chemical called phthalate, and the hard plastic, such as PVC tubing, you know, used in plumbing, that can be softened with phthalate. Well, phthalate has been tested for 50 years. It's been found completely harmless.
Mm-hmm.
It's a marvelous, brilliant chemical. And as I say, it's been used in medical plastics for half a century. Well, Greenpeace, Healthcare Without Harm, and a few other groups have said there's a possibility that this phthalate-treated plastic can cause cancer. Worse, there's a possibility that this phthalate-treated plastic can cause little baby boys' genitalia to shrivel. Why? Because they had done tests on rats and alligators, and they found that the little rat and alligator penises shriveled.
And were so much like reptiles.
Oh, absolutely. And therefore, they've generalized from this unscientific animal investigation to all human beings, not just to the little baby boys who are being on neonatal rescue, but to all adults who are using breathing tubes and dialysis tubes and other flexible plastics.
You know, this is proof that they really are shape-shifting lizards. They're looking out for their own.
Well, they're looking out for something else. They're actually, I'm sorry to report, they're looking out for reducing population.
Absolutely. I'm with you there. I believe that all along, that if they can't have, if they can't get Ebola to be in severely widespread, well, they'll take the next best thing.
Well, it's part of, once again, a very verifiable pattern. We eliminated one of the safest, best insecticides, DDT.
Yes, and look at the upshot of that. You know,
well,
you know better than anybody. Without DDT, talk about what we got.
Well, we eliminated malaria right here in the United States thanks to DDT.
Mm-hmm.
And we've eliminated it in various parts of the world, again, thanks to DDT. There's nothing which is as good at eliminating the mosquitoes that that transmit malaria than DDT.
Right.
However, the environmental groups, all in favor of sustainable medicine, have insisted that any country that uses DDT, and this means most of the countries of Africa that want to do it, shall not get World Bank, shall
right.
not get various donations of money. In fact, the European Union refuses to accept any product, any food product from Africa if it has been treated with DDT.
And meanwhile, millions have died in Africa due to the end of DDT. So, you know, while you normally think the sustainable people, well, they just want to make sure they level America, this is their insipid stupidity where the very people they're trying to help, they're slaughtering.
You're absolutely correct. In fact, I was working recently with actually at a meeting in Reno, Nevada, with a marvelous man by the name of Paul Dreesen, who wrote a book called Eco-Imperialism, Green Power and Black Death. And he has been able to say it's not just millions of Africans, it's actually half a billion
wow.
Africans die every year from malaria.
Wow. Dr. Madeline Kosman is my guest. I think she's just tremendous. And as you can see, as I was saying, it's like an onion where there are layers and layers and layers. And the only commonality seems to be it goes back to, the ugly head of socialism.
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
Let's talk about the Sea Crane Company a moment, who are tremendous. Excellent customer service. It's a small catalog. Everything in it is something Bob Crane believes in. Most catalogs, manufacturers can buy their way in. Not here. He believes in every one of these products, and I can tell you that over the years, everything he has sent me is just so amazingly good. You know, I rave about the world's best tweezers, and it's one of those things where I didn't know there was a difference, but there is. And not only for grooming purposes, but, when you're setting tiny screws and when you're trying to rebuild part of the computer and all that, there's nothing like them. They're just tremendous. Or, speaking of health, the MyoShape heart rate monitor. Firstly, it's a great watch, but in addition to that, it's a highly accurate heart rate monitor. Just put a couple of fingers on it at any time. You'll get your heart rate with EKG accuracy, no chest strap, no nothing. It also measures your calorie intake and what you burn during a workout, and it's just great. And, of course, the world's best radios and radio information. And something that we've been just marveling at is this Songbook Radio. It is the best music in a small portable that I've ever heard. It's just warm. It brings back the sound of the tube sets. Yeah, Macintosh, Voice of Music, and all those wonderful warm tones are in this all-digital radio. I don't know how they do it, but it's AM, it's FM, and it's truly tremendous in terms of reception, too. And it's got an aux switch, so if you've got a portable device that doesn't have a speaker, you can use this as your amplifier. I do that with, actually, my television monitor in the studio. Turn the aux jack on when I want to hear it, and it just sounds big time. Truly terrific. Plus, it's waterproof and looks great. Take it to the beach. 800-522-8863 is the phone number. They'll be back tomorrow whenever you get up. They'd love to talk to you directly. 800-522-TUNE. Or, you know, you can go online anytime, 24 hours a day. CCRadio.com. Discover something new today, they say, and I guarantee you will. You tell them that Raleigh sent you. All right, so we will be back to Dr. Cosman in moments right here. Yeah, and I haven't even gotten started on The Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show. To the max, The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh now at 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH.
Except don't call. I'm hogging Dr. Cosman. That's right, because I haven't even really gotten started, and there's just so many areas, and in fact, we will bring it back to you, and based on some of the things I've read in her writings, we can prove it's socialism. But, you know, here we are talking about Africa and DDT banning, which, of course, is killing, you know, untold, like you're saying, maybe half a billion people, and at the same time, we have the Live 8 concerts and the recent G8 meetings that have to give billions for AIDS prevention. Now, the hypocrisy has got to be startling to you.
It's not only startling, it's disgusting. And I am absolutely amazed that so many people are willing to look seriously at those stars who come in on their expensive jets and wear their fancy clothes and then praise the idea of the mud hut and the lack of electricity and the lack of genetically transformed food, and they actually prefer to see people starve and die, but of course in their quaint little huts with their beautiful non-electrified life. Well, this is just absolutely despicable.
Well, sure, and that's part of the self-righteousness of true socialism, that they know better than you how to care for yourself, and of course they live in a different strata.
Of course.
Now, interestingly, when I was looking at the sustainable medical information that you had in one of your articles, and I was reading the 6 or 7 points, it was fascinating to hit home that when we're talking about medicine, and it's the UN and it's sustainable, it has nothing to do with medicine and everything to do with dollars.
Exactly. And the it's remarkable, actually, to see the way in which the people who promote sustainable medicine use the idea of illness and medicine as a cure for illness as a means to get to people emotionally, because it's very difficult to say we want to see little babies die, and therefore our ability to say no to things that are idiotic is in essence suspended. We right. have a willing suspension of disbelief if we think that we're dealing with something that deals with the life and death of vulnerable people.
Right.
But in fact, what the sustainable medicine people want is an elimination of private property. They don't want the private property and the private industry and capitalism that will lead to pollution of their favorite water or air source, or for that matter, their favorite forest.
Yeah, just the concept that in the first point they are saying, to boil it down to something, they're saying that poverty creates disease.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, right. And you know, hey, I've been poor before, and it usually might make me hungry, but it never made me sick. Then, of course, they build on that, and of course, they talk about how inequitable and immoral private property is, which, again, to in the first point, when you're talking about world medicine, the first point, you're saying you have to grab all the private property. That's been beyond anything imaginable. Then, in point two, we're saying that not only is it bad that you and I might be polluting, but commercial pollution is a real issue that basically commerce is filth, so we can't have that. And, you know, it goes on from there, and there's not one thing in this that has anything to do with health. All it is about leveling the disparities, quote-unquote, that no one will have more than someone else.
Well, your use of the word disparity is absolutely on point. In fact, what they are complaining about in the sustainable medicine world is that there are three different types of disparities. First, there's a disparity in actual health and the disparity in access to health care country to country. And they want to be sure that if poor people in Africa or Asia cannot have MRIs and EKGs, then rich people in America should not have them either, because then there is a disparity in health between East and West, rich and poor. And just by the way, in the sustainable medicine documents, they don't ever speak about people in sovereign nations.
Right,
they
humans in settlements.
Exactly. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I read that, because when I first saw settlements, I'm thinking settlements like displaced people of the Gaza or something. And then I go further and I said, oh, no, the humans and settlements rather than citizens or sovereign nations. Yes. Yes.
It's disgusting.
Well, it is disgusting, but beyond that, it's frightening. Oh, by the way, how many people are in Africa? Do you have any idea?
I can't answer. But I do know that 500 million die every year thanks to malaria.
So now
I really don't know what the population of Africa is.
That means there are literally billions and billions, though, right?
Oh, there are.
Okay.
If you consider North and South Africa together, that is the whole continent
right.
of Africa.
Right. Okay, good. Because a caller had called and said, wait a minute, there's only 900 million Africans. No, that's not right. There's got to be a lot more than that.
I really can't give you the precise number, but it is sufficiently large that if 500 million perish, that is, it's approximately 450 million die of malaria every year. That's 500 million people.
Wow!
It's an astonishing statistic, but it appears, although it's hard to say it and not be thought of as weird, it appears that this is intentional. That is, the elimination of large numbers of people is part
sure.
of what the sustainable medicine people quote as the Cairo Protocol.
Yeah, it's got to be.
In 1994, there was a meeting of sustainable development and sustainable medicine experts in Cairo, Egypt. And what they concluded was that the burden of human beings to the environment was so dramatic that they had to find a way of redressing the balance. Oh, I was speaking about disparity, and I sort of got off the subject, but this is related to it. The Cairo Protocols recommend that there must be a limitation in the number of people who are burdening the ecosystem.
Right.
And I was speaking about disparity, because you had mentioned the word. There's a disparity of people country to country. Then the sustainable medicine people worry about disparity from generation to generation, so that we should not use the materials and the assets we have available to us now, because we must protect them for future generations of people yet to be born. And then the worst and most distressing type of disparity that they describe that we must avoid is interspecies disparity. Namely, if there's something which is important for human beings and it will life affirm and life extend, we must not use it if it is in any way to the detriment of, say, polar bears or salamanders,
right,
or vernal pools or rocks. So if the environment is in any way burdened by something important for human beings, the human beings must give it up and, in essence, commit suicide,
right,
in favor of allowing the environment to thrive.
Right, and this is so beyond, you know, when you mention this to the average person, it's so beyond anybody's comprehension that this could be the deal, that they just like the going back to when you were testifying on Hillary Care, the outraged senator who, oh, that's not in there, that can't be in there, because people are anesthetized to all this because it's easier, then you don't have to be involved or worry about it, because still that concept that the government is good is pretty much the norm in most people's thinking, and right now we are on the precipice of disaster.
Well, if any of the listeners are doubting what they're hearing, let me suggest that they go onto Google and type in the words sustainable medicine. Make it two words.
Oh, yeah, it's there.
And what they'll get is, if according to my last count, 5,850,000 references.
Oh, jeez.
One of my former medical students, who's a very distinguished, graying, paunchy fellow I had met recently in an airport, and he said, where are you going? I gave him a flyer to show what I was going to be speaking on, and he said, what in hell is sustainable medicine? Clearly you don't want unsustainable medicine. Well, he mocked me mercilessly, and he was just, in essence, a pompous ass,
mm-hmm,
and therefore I logged on in the airport to my Google connection, and I was able to get my 5,850,000 references, and I was able to therefore prove that this is something that many people, in fact, at least 5,850,000 people know about throughout the world. Americans are among the last ones. We don't know, but everyone who lives under socialized medicine, say in England or Germany or Scandinavian countries, everyone who lives under socialized medicine knows sustainable medicine, because what it requires is not only a voluntary giving up of certain high-tech, important scientific products, but it also involves giving up important scientific, high-tech medical ideas. It requires us to rethink, revise our concept of what is valuable for human beings. It requires us to take seriously the right to die and transform it into a duty to die.
Oh, and we've seen that, certainly with what just went on with the Terry Schiavo case. And then, of course, in England, where doctors there literally are on record as saying the patient should not decide the quality of their life. We should. And they're adamant about that. Now, at the same time, they're trying to kind of quell the population who doesn't want to wait 6 months for a routine examination. And for the first time in England, they're actually talking about allowing people to go to other EU nations for care if the line is too long. The Canadian Supreme Court just ruled, as you probably know, that eliminating private medicine entirely is unconstitutional. So we're seeing in all the places where it exists, to try and quell the people, there's all sorts of ways to mitigate it. Yet here, we continue to run towards it.
This is really quite amazing. You're absolutely correct. Now, Canada had outlawed private care entirely. And thanks to this new Supreme Court case in Canada, private care is now being encouraged. But the ways in which the English, the Germans, and the Canadians could get off the queue, get off the impossibly long line, get off the terror of having to wait 3 years for necessary surgery was simply to cross the border and come to America and pay for the best. And they got it. It's absurd that we are attempting to imitate these socialized medicine countries when, in fact, what we have here, imperfect though it is the highest standard of medicine in the whole world.
Oh, yeah, and even though right now we're under horrible siege with HIPAA, and even though it's going in a terrible direction, it's still, the standard in terms of what you'd want worldwide. And you're right, the growth in the Twin Cities or even in Fargo, Moorhead, or Grand Forks of individuals who can come down from Canada, anybody with a couple bucks runs here when they have a health care issue. And, of course, the frightening thing is we'd have nowhere to go.
In fact, if we socialize medicine, there will be no place in the world to go.
Right. Right. And, of course, it's interesting right now that India is trying to offer cheap medicine, vacations for your surgery, and things of that nature. So it's fascinating to see other places trying to come up with creative ways to be capitalists when we are doing everything we can to make sure that that's not the case. Now, that brings me to the issue of, quote-unquote, alternative health care, because for years a number of people were saying, hey, there's a number of things I want to treat outside the system. And there was a lot of holistic care available. What's happened ever since the government has instituted, quote-unquote, complementary medicine is it seems like the people who were the biggest fighters from the outside are now, either for the grants or whatever, in lockstep mentality with the system.
Unfortunately, that seems to be true, because they actually benefit mightily. And what has happened in the alternative health care is very much like what happened in the early days of Medicare. When Medicare came in 1965, mm-hmm. numerous physicians were in essence seduced. It was a Don Juan seduction.
Mm-hmm.
They were offered money, and they were offered freedom. They were offered gentle civil law. And in fact, what has happened is that the money that they were offered has been reduced dramatically, and therefore many people accepting Medicare cannot even pay their own overhead and their own bills. And the civil law that had been gentle and non-intrusive is now criminal
right.
law. And it's absolutely intrusive upon every aspect of the practice of medicine.
And when you talk about the dollars that have been reduced, this goes to the heart when people say, well, why the heck is suddenly insurance so expensive? Why is private care so expensive? Well, these people who have to take the Medicare patient and have to accept the money the government's decided to give for it, they got to pass along the cost somewhere else, and it's cost shifting.
That's absolutely true. What is also true is that we are treating so many illegal aliens for free.
And that's cost shifting.
Once again,
yeah.
There's cost shifting.
Big time. And for people who think, as we were saying in the first hour, well, just don't treat them. Well, no, that it's illegal not to treat them. So they're stuck. And then, of course, we, the end user, wind up paying the full freight. And, of course, sadly, it plays right into the government's hands, because then people say, wait a minute, I've got a $700 premium for health care. I can't pay this. The government needs to do something. And so suddenly we've created that economic clamor for people to walk into a disastrous system.
Well, there are several ways out. And I tend to still maintain my optimism, even though occasionally I will almost succumb to the overpowering difficulties. I think that Americans are stunningly intelligent, and I have great faith in the American people. I think that we are now creating classes of people who are being paid to behave like asses and ignoramuses, and because they're clever and self-interested, they behave like asses and ignoramuses. But if, in fact, we tell the American people what the truth is, they behave marvelously. They behave with intelligence and self-interest, as they ought to. And in medicine now, there is something new, brand new, which is magnificent and I believe could be the salvation of medicine as America should have it, and that's the health savings accounts. The health savings accounts allow people, rich people, poor people, young people, old people, to have individuality, to have choice, to have the ability to choose regular scientific care, alternative care, naturopathic care, acupuncture, whatever it is they wish, and pay with their own money, but be covered as well with catastrophic health insurance once the personal account is used up.
Yeah,
I think that would be the future.
I think it's a great idea, and I'm doing that myself personally. But, you know, in Pennsylvania, it's fascinating. The state still will not allow, not that it matters to me, you know, in terms of the downside, but for some people, they still will not allow an HSA to be tax-free from state tax. So,
really?
Yes, that's right. They passed a law saying no, basically, and it was fascinating to see that. So there's still a lot of state differences. Plus, we're still at a point where, and as you well know, the system works real simply. If you are uninsured, you pay quote-unquote retail, whereas the insurance company has a negotiated price. It may not be as good as Medicare, but it's a lot better than you'd pay. Well, the other problem is that a lot of the big dogs are not yet in the HSA world, and so the companies that are, yeah, you're getting a negotiated rate, but it's a lot more than if you were with the giants.
Well, with the health savings accounts coming in, and they're beautifully new. They're really only about a year old, and we now have over 1 million people who've bought them, and I think that's marvelous. In any event, there's a huge tendency now for physicians to leave government-paid clinics, to leave Medicare, leave Medicaid, and start their own cash-only clinics. And I've seen these all over the country, and they're a remarkable entrepreneurial, logical, respectful medicine in which the physician and the patient are back in control, as opposed to having a third-party payer intervene. And this, I think, is where the HSAs are going to become really powerful. They're going to stimulate physicians to go to cash only and eliminate insurance entirely, except for major hospital and catastrophic events.
Well, and it sounds great. I got a couple questions about that, that's for sure. Yes, and considering how much the government wants to move toward socialized medicine, how long is it that these HSAs will live? But there's more to it than that, as well as a number of other things of import. Dr. Madeline Kosman joins us tonight on The Raleigh James Show.
Science Report presents Ice Volcanoes and Termites.
How would you like to have fried chicken on your table just about any time you wanted it, huh? Well, now, look, yeah, baby, you can.
Treat him gently and to him be true.
Send you 110 of the finest baby chicks you ever saw for the low, low price of just $2.95 plus 50 cents handling charge.
Let's make it right. Put them clothes back on.
Hamster sandwich, hamster and cheese. Hamster sandwiches with nail knees.
Hot dog, here's a dedication.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
It is the Raleigh James Show in progress, and we are talking with Dr. Madeline Kosman. Hello, Philadelphia, on the Big Talker 1210 that gets in this hour, as well as News Talk 640 WHLO in Akron. You'll catch up. There are so many facets to Dr. Kosman's career. But when it all comes down to it, whether we're talking about sustainable development and those agendas, whether we're talking about Hillary Care or HIPAA and how much of that we've got, whether we're talking about what's wrong at the borders and what we're seeing with our illegals in terms of diseases we thought we eradicated, it all comes back to the globalist agenda and socialism, which, regardless how you feel about that in the abstract, in the absolute reality of it, it clearly limits your choices. This is not about money, although that's a facet of it too, but your choices with regard to your most personal rights, such as your health care. And Dr. Cosman, I got an email from a fella in Texas, Mitch, who listens regularly, and I know you were talking in some of your articles about everything like malaria that has reemerged.
Yes.
But we're hearing now on college campuses is more and more about meningitis outbreaks. Any connection?
I don't know. I've heard that, but I haven't actually had a chance to explore it. It's conceivable, but I don't know.
Yeah, but the TB we do know, and the leprosy we do know.
There is absolutely no question that there are certain diseases such as TB, but let's take a look at what TB means now. It's not the old-fashioned TB. It's a new tuberculosis called MDR-TB. It's multiple drug-resistant tuberculosis.
Sure.
This is not the same relatively gentle TB that we had virtually eradicated. It was possible with the old-fashioned tuberculosis to cure in, say, 6 months, use 4 drugs, and perhaps at the cost of $2,000 per patient. This new multiple drug-resistant tuberculosis is called by many people who deal with it a time bomb because it's stunningly difficult to treat. It's 60% fatal, and it costs per patient, and this is right from the Centers for Disease Control, any place near $250,000 to $1.2 million per patient.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, if there's a major outbreak in California, and there have been, this is a stunning burden upon an already burdened and broken medical system.
Oh, sure. And I think that much like today when we talk about childhood diseases like measles that have been theoretically eradicated, with all the drugs that have been around, you know, you've been fighting TB with antibiotics for years, so the TB organisms aren't, you know, without their own survival mechanism. They're fully resistant to what we're used to using. So, of course, they become very virulent, and not only in terms of money, but what that does to the human body for the kind of drugs they have to use now to try and eradicate it has far-reaching side effects if you do make it.
You're absolutely correct, because the drugs that are used are very toxic and have numerous side effects. You're absolutely right. In fact, on the same subject of the mutation of the actual organisms themselves for their own survival, there was an outbreak recently of dengue fever. Who would ever think of dengue fever here in the United States?
No one's heard of it.
Well, it's a nasty infectious disease that, however, has been having various outbreaks, generally on, say, the Mexican border with Texas. Webb County,
yeah.
Texas, had a big dengue fever explosion, but this was not ordinary dengue, which is nasty, but it's not fatal. This was dengue hemorrhagic fever. And
yeah.
As the name implies, it causes the individual to bleed to death.
Yeah, like Ebola or Marburg.
Exactly. So this type of disease that is being brought into the country is clearly it is actually the potential lethal, bomb-like weapon of health destruction. And we've got to understand that that's what these things are. They're not innocent.
No, not on any level. And again, the fact that we've quote-unquote eradicated them, the very things we've eradicated them with are the things that when they come back, they're completely resistant to, and we're completely without ability to treat them, because in the third world country, the people just die.
That's exactly correct. And there are numerous, there are things such as Chagas disease.
Oh, yeah, the
Chagas
kissing disease.
Is horrible.
Yeah.
And in Latin America, about 18 million people contract it every year, and 50,000 of those die. Well, we now have Chagas disease here. It's a terrible, I think the nickname for it is kissing.
Right, but it's not good, yeah, because of the lips and the face.
Right,
but
exactly. But once the bug, that despicable trypanosome bites the lips and the face, then Chagas actually infiltrates some major organs, such as the heart or the intestines, and then after a number of years, the organ is so weakened that it explodes.
Right.
Well, that's a fairly disgusting and horrible death.
Well, not only that, even if it is, say, let's say you got to the outside and you're making it 20 years before intestine explosion, these are 20 years where you're largely debilitated.
Exactly.
It's not the kind of thing where you've been perfectly healthy and you wake up 1 minute and your heart explodes. So, and of course, these are, you know, what are these, protozoa or something. They're not the kind of thing we're normally thinking we're going to treat here. And, you know, I also thought it was interesting because when you look at all the drugs you take for any of this, of course, the poor liver is going to be really, you know, taxed in this. And then you read that, gee, all forms of HEP are back.
That's correct. Now, and what people have got to understand is that hepatitis is sometimes transmitted, say hepatitis A, by feces.
Yes.
What we've got to perceive is that if we are inviting people into our restaurants, and a huge number of illegal aliens are in fact in the restaurant business, they're in the food preparation business or the food cleaning business or the food transport business or the dishwashing. Well, in various restaurants, there was one not long ago, I think it was 2002.
Oh, we know.
Restaurant.
Yeah, it's in Pittsburgh. And,
exactly.
And what's really sad is, and I had no idea there were illegals in there, and your article pointed that out, and it was 2003, This bankrupted the chain. They're gone.
That's correct.
Yeah, and that's a real shame because, yeah, it was the green onions, and when I read that they had fecal contamination, I had not known that they also had illegals in their kitchen.
Right. Well, actually, it turned out that the scallions used in the salsa, I think it was, that were contaminated with feces that had been used as fertilizer. They also had, that is, they had illegal scallions as well as illegal aliens.
Right, because we're talking human feces that was used as fertilizer.
Precisely. And what many must perceive is that if there are people working in the kitchens who are illegal aliens who come from cultures in which it's customary to not have good bathroom hygiene and literally to use their hands for wiping their bottoms.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's disgusting, but it's true.
Well,
and we've got to appreciate that disease is transmitted literally person to person, bodily fluid or bodily solid to person. And what Americans must wake up to is that what appears to be a cheap source of labor is a very expensive form of infection.
Yes, yeah, and well put, that's absolutely true. And expensive both in the closing of our hospitals and the money you spent, but really expensive when it's you or your loved one who's hit with something that may be fatal.
Exactly.
And just by the nature of them being illegal, you know, we have no idea what they bring with them. And again, for many of them, it's certainly not with malice, but it doesn't much matter when you're facing a medical report with this stuff. Now, one of the other things that's alarming is, as bad as our border is at catching anybody, when they do catch folks, if they catch people who are Odoms other than Mexicans, we have this insanity policy where we give them what I like to call the notice to disappear. It's a notice to appear. 90% of them never show up, and they're in. They can be anywhere in America after that.
I've been speaking with people who are professionally in border patrol. And they are so frustrated and so angry, they indeed call it the notice to disappear. And we are essentially creating a world upside down. The other than Mexicans who come in, we allow to disappear into our culture, and that means people coming from those countries that sponsor or harbor, or for that matter, generate terrorists. This is absolutely nutty. What do we do when we find the illegal alien who must be examined for a general disease or a specific contagious disease? Well, if he's got something minor, we let him go and we may deport him. But if he's got something major, contagious and terrible, we keep him. And why do we keep him? The misplaced altruism in our medical system creates a type of ludicrous pride. Once again, we say we have the proper medication, we can treat him. In his own country, he'd have only primitive medical services. So we keep, at our expense, at our Medicaid...
our tax dollars, at your and my expense, yes.
But we keep the person here and attempt to treat, and then if we can't, we simply let him out into the city to infect our own citizens.
Right, into the general populace. And by the way, you know, it's okay that he's brought his family with him while he's here for treatment.
Correct.
So it becomes absolute and utter insanity. And again, you know, as you were saying, when you go back to it, the only thing that makes sense, we get right into the conspiracies, is in fact the concept of globalism and the concept of socialism. And then, of course, we get to the dreaded UN and that wonderful concept of sustainable development, which is not just for land anymore.
Well, when it first came out in 1992, and the Biodiversity Treaty and the Rio Treaty were promoted, it sounded so benign and so delightful that we were going to protect the environment against pollution and nasty things of that sort. But you're absolutely correct. What it is, in essence, is a land grab. It's an attempt to eliminate private property. I had the chance to recently read and study and analyze the sustainable medicine documents that come out of that same tradition, Agenda 21.
Mm-hmm.
And I got them directly from Geneva, from the World Health Organization. And the intentions of sustainable medicine are absolutely pernicious. People will be shocked to realize that various high-tech medical products that we take totally for granted are being attacked by those who promote sustainable medicine because they're so good that they are not accessible to all people, therefore Americans should not have access to them.
Right.
The old business of if it's not for all, it shall be for none. And I was shocked to recognize that one of the things that the sustainable medicine people are attacking is flexible medical plastics. That is, if you think about cardiac catheterization, kidney dialysis, breathing tubes, feeding tubes, blood transfusion tubes, they're all with this beautiful, elegant, flexible plastic tubing.
Mm-hmm.
Or the bags for medicine and medication are, again, flexible plastic bags.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before 50 years ago, the same types of treatments and therapies had to be given with metal tubing or ceramic or glass tubing, which, of course, was clearly painful and colossally clumsy. And therefore, with the flexible plastic, people can have normal ambulatory life and things go beautifully. In any event, Greenpeace, Healthcare Without Harm, a group of environmental groups, all associated with sustainable medicine,
mm-hmm.
want to eliminate flexible plastics. There's a chemical called phthalate, and the hard plastics, such as PVC tubing, you know, used in plumbing, that can be softened with phthalate. Well, phthalate has been tested for 50 years. It's been found completely harmless.
Mm-hmm.
It's a marvelous, brilliant chemical. And as I say, it's been used in medical plastics for half a century. Well, Greenpeace, Healthcare Without Harm, and a few other groups have said there's a possibility that this phthalate-treated plastic can cause cancer. Worse, there's a possibility that this phthalate untreated plastic can cause little baby boys' genitalia to shrivel. Why? Because they had done tests on rats and alligators, and they found that the little rat and alligator penises shriveled.
And were so much like reptiles.
Oh, absolutely. And therefore, they've generalized from this unscientific animal investigation to all human beings, not just to the little baby boys who are being on neonatal rescue, but to all adults who are using breathing tubes and dialysis tubes and other flexible plastic.
You know, this is proof that they really are shape-shifting lizards. They're looking out for their own.
Well, they're looking out for something else. They're actually, I'm sorry to report, they're looking out for reducing population.
Absolutely. I'm with you there. I believe that all along, that if they can't have, if they can't get Ebola to be in severely widespread, well, they'll take the next best thing.
Well, it's part of, once again, a very verifiable pattern. We eliminated one of the safest, best insecticides, DDT.
Yes, and look at the upshot of that. You know,
well,
you know better than anybody. Without DDT, talk about what we got.
Well, we eliminated malaria right here in the United States thanks to DDT.
Mm-hmm.
And we've eliminated it in various parts of the world, again, thanks to DDT. There's nothing which is as good at eliminating the mosquitoes that that transmit malaria than DDT.
Right.
However, the environmental groups, all in favor of sustainable medicine, have insisted that any country that uses DDT, and this means most of the countries of Africa that want to do it, shall not get World Bank, shall
right.
not get various donations of money. In fact, the European Union refuses to accept any product, any food product from Africa if it has been treated with DDT.
And meanwhile, millions have died in Africa due to the end of DDT. So, you know, while you normally think the sustainable people, well, they just want to make sure they level America, this is their insipid stupidity where the very people they're trying to help, they're slaughtering.
You're absolutely correct. In fact, I was working recently with, actually at a meeting in Reno, Nevada, with a marvelous man by the name of Paul Dreesen, who wrote a book called Eco-Imperialism, Green Power and Black Death. And he has been able to say it's not just millions of Africans, it's actually half a billion
wow.
Africans die every year from malaria.
Wow. Dr. Madeline Kosman is my guest. I think she's just tremendous. And as you can see, as I was saying, it's like an onion where there are layers and layers and layers. And the only commonality seems to be it goes back to, the ugly head of socialism.
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
Let's talk about the Sea Crane Company a moment, who are tremendous. Excellent customer service. It's a small catalog. Everything in it is something Bob Crane believes in. Most catalogs, manufacturers can buy their way in. Not here. He believes in every one of these products, and I can tell you that over the years, everything he has sent me is just so amazingly good. You know, I rave about the world's best tweezers, and it's one of those things where I didn't know there was a difference, but there is. And not only for grooming purposes, but, when you're setting tiny screws and, when you're trying to rebuild part of the computer and all that, there's nothing like them. They're just tremendous. Or, speaking of health, the MyoShape heart rate monitor, firstly, it's a great watch, but in addition to that, it's a highly accurate heart rate monitor. Just could put a couple of fingers on it at any time, you'll get your heart rate with EKG accuracy, no chest strap, no nothing. It also measures your calorie intake and what you burn during a workout, and it's just great. And, of course, the world's best radios and radio information. And something that we've been just marveling at is this Songbook Radio. It is the best music in a small portable that I've ever heard. It's just warm. It brings back the sound of the tube sets. Yeah, Macintosh, Voice of Music, and all those those wonderful warm tones are in this all digital radio. I don't know how they do it, but it's AM, it's FM, and it's truly tremendous in terms of reception too. And it's got an aux switch, so if you've got a portable device that doesn't have a speaker, you can use this as your amplifier. I do that with actually my television monitor in the studio. Turn the aux jack on when I want to hear it, and it just sounds big time. Truly terrific. Plus, it's waterproof and looks great. Take it to the beach. 800-522-8863 is the phone number. They'll be back tomorrow whenever you get up. They'd love to talk to you directly. 800-522-TUNE. Or, you know, you can go online anytime, 24 hours a day. CCRadio.com. Discover something new today, they say, and I guarantee you will. You tell them that Raleigh sent you. All right, so we will be back to Dr. Cosman in moments right here. Yeah, and I haven't even gotten started on The Raleigh James Show.
The Raleigh James Show. To the max. The Raleigh James Show. Call Raleigh now at 888-876-5593. 8888-RALEIGH.
'Cause don't call. I'm hogging Dr. Cosman. That's right, because I haven't even really gotten started, and there's just so many areas, and in fact, we will bring it back to you, and based on some of the things I've read in her writings, we can prove it's socialism. But, you know, here we are talking about Africa and DDT banning, which, of course, is killing, you know, untold, like you're saying, maybe half a billion people, and at the same time, we have the Live 8 concerts and the recent G8 meetings that have to give billions for AIDS prevention. Now, the hypocrisy has got to be startling to you.
It's not only startling, it's disgusting. And I am absolutely amazed that so many people are willing to look seriously at those stars who come in on their expensive jets and wear their fancy clothes and then praise the idea of the mud hut and the lack of electricity and the lack of genetically transformed food, and they actually prefer to see people starve and die, but of course in their quaint little huts with their beautiful non-electrified life. Well, this is just absolutely despicable.
Well, sure, and that's part of the self-righteousness of true socialism, that they know better than you how to care for yourself, and of course they live in a different strata.
Of course.
Now, interestingly, when I was looking at the sustainable medical information that you had in one of your articles, and I was reading the 6 or 7 points, it was fascinating to hit home that when we're talking about medicine, and it's the UN and it's sustainable, it has nothing to do with medicine and everything to do with dollars.
Exactly. And the it's remarkable, actually, to see the way in which the people who promote sustainable medicine use the idea of illness and medicine as a cure for illness as a means to get to people emotionally, because it's very difficult to say we want to see little babies die, and therefore our ability to say no to things that are idiotic is in essence suspended. We
right.
have a willing suspension of disbelief if we think that we're dealing with something that deals with the life and death of vulnerable people.
Right.
But in fact, what the sustainable medicine people want is an elimination of private property. They don't want the private property and the private industry and capitalism that will lead to pollution of their their favorite water or air source, or for that matter, their favorite forest.
Yeah, just the concept that in the first point they are saying, to boil it down to something, they're saying that poverty creates disease.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, right. And you know, hey, I've been poor before, and it usually might make me hungry, but it never made me sick. Then, of course, they build on that, and of course, they talk about how inequitable and immoral private property is, which, again, in the first point, when you're talking about world medicine, the first point, you're saying you have to grab all the private property. That's been beyond anything imaginable. Then, in point two, we're saying that not only is it bad that you and I might be polluting, but commercial pollution is a real issue that basically commerce is filth, so we can't have that. And, you know, it goes on from there, and there's not one thing in this that has anything to do with health. All it is about leveling the disparities, quote-unquote, that no one will have more than someone else.
Well, your use of the word disparity is absolutely on point. In fact, what they are complaining about in the sustainable medicine world is that there are three different types of disparities. First, there is a disparity in actual health and the disparity in access to health care country to country. And they want to be sure that if poor people in Africa or Asia cannot have MRIs and EKGs, then rich people in America should not have them either, because then there is a disparity in health between East and West, rich and poor. And just by the way, in the sustainable medicine documents, they don't ever speak about people in sovereign nations.
Right,
they
humans in settlements.
Exactly. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I read that, because when I first saw settlements, I'm thinking settlements like displaced people of the Gaza or something. And then I go further and I said, oh, no. The humans and settlements rather than citizens or sovereign nations. Yes. Yes.
It's disgusting.
Well, it is disgusting, but beyond that, it's frightening. Oh, by the way, how many people are in Africa? Do you have any idea?
I can't answer. But I do know that 500 million die every year thanks to malaria.
So now
I really don't know what the population of Africa is.
So that means there are literally billions and billions, though, right?
Oh, there are. Okay. If you consider North and South Africa together, that is the whole continent
right.
of Africa.
Right. Okay, good. Because a caller had called and said, wait a minute, there's only 900 million Africans. He said, no, that's not right. There's got to be a lot more than that.
I really can't give you the precise number, but it is sufficiently large that if 500 million perish, that is, it's approximately 450 million die of malaria every year. That's 500 million people.
Wow!
So
it's
an astonishing statistic, but it appears, although it's hard to say it and not be thought of as weird, it appears that this is intentional. That is, the elimination of large numbers of people is part of what the sustainable medicine people quote as the Cairo Protocol.
Yeah, it's got to be.
In 1994, there was a meeting of sustainable development and sustainable medicine experts in Cairo, Egypt. And what they concluded was that the burden of human beings to the environment was so dramatic that they had to find a way of redressing the balance. Oh, I was speaking about disparity, and I sort of got off the subject, but this is related to it. The Cairo Protocols recommend that there must be a limitation in the number of people who are burdening the ecosystem.
Right.
And I was speaking about disparity, because you had mentioned the word. There's a disparity of people country to country. Then the sustainable medicine people worry about disparity from generation to generation, so that we should not use the materials and the assets we have available to us now, because we must protect them
for future generations of people yet to be born. And then the worst and most distressing type of disparity that they describe that we must avoid is interspecies disparity. Namely, if there's something which is important for human beings and it will life affirm and life extend, we must not use it if it is in any way to the detriment of, say, polar bears or salamanders
right.
or vernal pools or rocks. So if the environment is in any way burdened by something important for human beings, the human beings must give it up and, in essence, commit suicide
right.
in favor of allowing the environment to thrive.
Right, and this is so beyond, you know, when you mention this to the average person, it's so beyond anybody's comprehension that this could be the deal that they just like the going back to when you were testifying on Hillary Care, the outraged senator who thought, oh, that's not in there, that can't be in there, because people are anesthetized to all this because it's easier, then you don't have to be involved or worry about it, because still that concept that the government is good is pretty much the norm in most people's thinking, and right now we are on the precipice of disaster.
Well, if any of the listeners are doubting what they're hearing, let me suggest that they go onto Google and type in the words sustainable medicine. Make it two words.
Oh, yeah, it's there.
And what they'll get is, if according to my last count, 5,850,000 references.
Oh, geez.
One of my former medical students, who's a very distinguished, graying, paunchy fellow I had met recently in an airport, and he said, where are you going? I gave him a flyer to show what I was going to be speaking on, and he said, what in hell is sustainable medicine? Clearly you don't want unsustainable medicine. Well, he mocked me mercilessly, and he was just, in essence, a pompous ass,
mm-hmm.
and therefore I logged on in the airport to my Google connection, and I was able to get my 5,850,000 references, and I was able to therefore prove that this is something that many people, in fact, at least 5,850,000 people know about throughout the world. Americans are among the last ones. We don't know, but everyone who lives under socialized medicine, say in England or Germany or Scandinavian countries, everyone who lives under socialized medicine knows sustainable medicine, because what it requires is not only a voluntary giving up of certain high-tech, important scientific products, but it also involves giving up important scientific, high-tech medical ideas. It requires us to rethink, revise our concept of what is valuable for human beings. It requires us to take seriously the right to die and transform it into a duty to die.
Oh, and we've seen that, certainly with what just went on with the Terry Schiavo case. And then, of course, in England, where doctors there literally are on record as saying the patient should not decide the quality of their life. We should. And they're adamant about that. Now, at the same time, they're trying to kind of quell the population who doesn't want to wait 6 months for a routine examination. And for the first time in England, they're actually talking about allowing people to go to other EU nations for care if the line is too long. The Canadian Supreme Court just ruled, as you probably know, that eliminating private medicine entirely is unconstitutional. So we're seeing in all the places where it exists to try and quell the people, there's all sorts of ways to mitigate it. Yet here, we continue to run towards it.
This is really quite amazing. You're absolutely correct. Now, Canada had outlawed private care entirely, and thanks to this new Supreme Court case in Canada, private care is now being encouraged. But the ways in which the English, the Germans, and the Canadians could get off the queue, get off the impossibly long line, get off the terror of having to wait 3 years for necessary surgery, was simply to cross the border and come to America and pay for the best. and they got it. It's absurd that we are attempting to imitate these socialized medicine countries when, in fact, what we have here, imperfect though it is the highest standard of medicine in the whole world.
Oh, yeah, and even though right now we're under horrible siege with HIPAA, and even though it's going in a terrible direction, it's still, the standard in terms of what you'd want worldwide. And you're right, the growth in the Twin Cities or even in Fargo, Moorhead, or Grand Forks of individuals who can come down from Canada, anybody with a couple bucks runs here when they have a health care issue. And, of course, the frightening thing is we'd have nowhere to go.
In fact, if we socialize medicine, there will be no place in the world to go.
Right. Right. And, of course, it's interesting right now that India is trying to offer cheap medicine, vacations for your surgery, and things of that nature. So it's fascinating to see other places trying to come up with creative ways to be capitalists when we are doing everything we can to make sure that that's not the case. Now, that brings me to the issue of, quote-unquote, alternative health care, because for years a number of people were saying, hey, there's a number of things I want to treat outside the system, and there was a lot of holistic care available. What's happened ever since the government has instituted, quote-unquote, complementary medicine is it seems like the people who were the biggest fighters from the outside are now, either for the grants or whatever, in lockstep mentality with the system.
Unfortunately, that seems to be true, because they actually benefit mightily, and what has happened in the alternative health care is very much like what happened in the early days of Medicare. When Medicare came in 1965, mm-hmm. numerous physicians were, in essence, seduced. It was a Don Juan seduction.
Mm-hmm.
They were offered money, and they were offered freedom. They were offered gentle civil law. And in fact, what has happened is that the money that they were offered has been reduced dramatically, and therefore many people accepting Medicare cannot even pay their own overhead and their own bills. And the civil law that had been gentle and non-intrusive is now criminal
right.
law. And it's absolutely intrusive upon every aspect of the practice of medicine.
And when you talk about the dollars that have been reduced, this goes to the heart when people say, well, why the heck is suddenly insurance so expensive? Why is private care so expensive? Well, these people who have to take the Medicare patient and have to accept the money the government's decided to give for it, they got to pass along the cost somewhere else, and it's cost shifting.
That's absolutely true. What is also true is that we are treating so many illegal aliens for free.
And that's cost
shifting.
Once
again,
yeah.
There's cost shifting.
Big time. And for people who think, as we were saying in the first hour, well, just don't treat them. Well, no, that it's illegal not to treat them. So they're stuck. And then, of course, we, the end user, wind up paying the full freight. And, of course, sadly, it plays right into the government's hands, because then people say, wait a minute, I've got a $700 premium for health care. I can't pay this. The government needs to do something. And so suddenly we've created that economic clamor for people to walk into a disastrous system.
Well, there are several ways out. And I tend to still maintain my optimism, even though occasionally I will almost succumb to the overpowering difficulties. I think that Americans are stunningly intelligent, and I have great faith in the American people. I think that we are now creating classes of people who are being paid to behave like asses and ignoramuses, and because they're clever and self-interested, they behave like asses and ignoramuses. But if, in fact, we tell the American people what the truth is, they behave marvelously. They behave with intelligence and self-interest, as they ought to. And in medicine now, there is something new, brand new, which is magnificent and I believe could be the salvation of medicine as America should have it, and that's the health savings account. The health savings accounts allow people, rich people, poor people, young people, old people, to have individuality, to have choice, to have the ability to choose regular scientific care, alternative care,
naturopathic care, acupuncture, whatever it is they wish, and pay with their own money, but be covered as well with catastrophic health insurance once the personal account is used up.
Yeah,
I think that would be the future.
I think it's a great idea, and I'm doing that myself and personally. But, you know, in Pennsylvania, it's fascinating. The state still will not allow, not that it matters to me, you know, in terms of the downside, but for some people, they still will not allow an HSA to be tax-free from state tax. So,
really?
Yes, that's right. They passed a law saying no, basically, and it was fascinating to see that. So there's still a lot of state differences. Plus, we're still at a point where, and as you well know, the system works real simply. If you are uninsured, you pay quote-unquote retail, whereas the insurance company has a negotiated price. It may not be as
right.
good as Medicare, but it's a lot better than you'd pay. Well, the other problem is that a lot of the big dogs are not yet in the HSA world, and so the companies that are, yeah, you're getting a negotiated rate, but it's a lot more than if you were with the giants.
Well, with the health savings accounts coming in, and they're beautifully new. They're really only about a year old, and we now have over 1 million people who've bought them, and I
yeah.
think that's marvelous. In any event, there's a huge tendency now for physicians to leave government-paid clinics, to leave Medicare, leave Medicaid, and start their own cash-only clinics. And I've seen these all over the country, and they're a remarkable entrepreneurial, logical, respectful medicine in which the physician and the patient are back in control, as opposed to having a third-party payer intervene. And this, I think, is where the HSAs are going to become really powerful. They're going to stimulate physicians to go to cash only and eliminate insurance entirely, except for major hospital and catastrophic events.
Well, and it sounds great. I got a couple questions about that, that's for sure. Yes, and considering how much the government wants to move toward socialized medicine, how long is it that these HSAs will live? But there's more to it than that, as well as a number of other things of import. Dr. Madeline Kosman joins us tonight on The Raleigh James Show.
Oh, boy. It's the Raleigh James Show.
And let me again mention Spotters. You know, I have just discovered, and by the way, it's spotters-shades.com. John was saying that I said it was spotters.shades. It is not. It is spotters, S-P-O-T-T-E-R-S, dash, S-H-A-D-E-S, dot C-O-M. Now, in addition to all the other dealers that I've been telling you about, we'll go over that again, should you be thinking about making the trek to Sturgis? Yeah, if you're a Harley rider and you know the annual event in the first week of August, there is a dealer in Sturgis. So, and by the way, thank you to those of you who listen to the show who walked into the store and asked for them. They've gone ahead and gotten them. And it's J&J Opticians in the heart of Sturgis, South Dakota. J&J Opticians. So if you're going for the big annual Harley meet, well, J&J Opticians. Now, what you can also do is go online, spotters-shades.com. Check them out. They are the absolute best. They eliminate glare, the ultimate driving tool, optical quality glass manufactured in Australia, and there's just nothing like them. We've yet to come across anybody who isn't stunned by how much better they are than any sunglasses they've ever had. When you eliminate glare, that's when you eliminate the difficulty in seeing, and it's not only bright sunlight, it's daytime rain, fog, or snow. Now, at Spotters -shades.com. You can see the whole deal for yourself. But if you want to see them in person, even better. Now you got several places, including J&J Opticians in the heart of Sturgis, South Dakota. Spotters at Kenworth in Kansas, in Wichita, I-135 North, exit 13. Kenworth of Dodge City U.S. 56 South and North on Mineola Road. Kenworth of Liberal, U.S. 54 to South Country Estates Road. Or, of course, the Peterbilt dealers, Peterbilt of Wisconsin at Madison. It's exit 132 off of 9094 in Madison. Or Peterbilt of Illinois at Wadsworth at the Russell Road exit on the state line. Both of them open 24 hours a day with a full supply of spotters. And Kenny Jones Positive Performance on I-44 at exit 88. All terrific places, and when you try them on, I want you to check out, there's 10 different lens styles, but I want you to check out that penetrator lens and tell me that they're not the absolute best sunglasses you've ever worn. So spotters-shades.com, and of course, tell them that Raleigh sent you. All right, so Dr. Madeline Cosman, a real trooper, will join us next hour as well, and we will continue to scare the living hell out of you. I love the idea of the HSA being a will it work, and what will happen, especially to alternative medicine, when virtually everybody has jumped on the government grant wagon, and it's harder and harder to find people who are practicing, let alone the It's for the Children. We'll come back to that, too.
The Raleigh James Show.